Festival in Nancy invited him with his production of Deaf Man Glance, that Dylan later went to Paris for a 6-month sold-out run in front of 2,000 people each. Some of them were Charlie Chaplin, Louis Aragon, Man Ray. Louis Aragon actually wrote an open letter in Le Figaro about Wilson to his dead friend André Breton, saying, "What we, from whom surrealism was born, dreamed would come after us and go beyond us." So he describes Wilson sort of as the final realization of surrealism. Deaf Man Glance was created in collaboration with Raymond Andrews, a deaf-mute Afro-American boy that Wilson adopted. He regards Raymond as his second most important artistic influence after the work of George Balanchine. His third most important influence artistically is an autistic boy by the name of Christopher Knowles, who also wrote most of the libretto of Einstein on the Beach, and Philip once told me that he's actually his favorite librettist. After the success of Einstein at the Metropolitan Opera, he was financially bankrupt and gave up his space in Soho and moved to Europe and started working in Germany and France with the professional theater companies. He has collaborated with Tom Waits, David Byrne, Jesse Norman, Lou Reed, Rufus Wainwright, recently Anthony Hegarty and Marina Abramovic. He has exhibited in galleries around the world, received numerous awards, had never a hit on Broadway, which I don't really understand, but there's still room, and I think he's getting better and better. And he founded an interdisciplinary art center on Long Island called the Watermill Center. So, how did you all meet, Lucinda? Did you know Bob and Philip before Einstein, or?
Actually, a friend of mine told me about Philip and said, "You must go come and hear his concerts in Lower Manhattan at that time when he was playing with the ensemble." And another friend said, "Have you seen A Letter to Queen Victoria, one of Bob's earlier productions from 1974? And I hadn't. And he said, "Well, you really must go." And sure,
that was on Broadway?
It was on Broadway at the end.
Because that was a 6-day run, apparently. And by the end of each 26 performances, how many visitors?
A lot of walkouts.
I thought it was fantastic. And Bob and I met shortly after, and he asked me if I wanted to be involved with Einstein on the Beach.
Wonderful. And Philip, how did you and Bob?
Well, I met. We had a mutual friend. We had mutual friends who told me about the performances he was doing at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Sue Wall was the one who brought me there. You know this. She was at, I knew her from the Walker Art Center. And what was that the, was that?
The Stalin, it was the 12-hour work.
Yeah, but it was the Life and Times of?
Life and Times of Joseph Stalin.
From 7
in the evening to 7 in the morning, Phil stayed all the way through to 7 a.m.
And I never saw Stalin. But anyway, we met afterwards. A number of people from the audience came to your home on Spring Street, and we had kind of a breakfast there, and Bob and I agreed to meet, and we began to meet regularly for lunch. The idea we'd meet once a week when we were both in New York, which was not every week. And we got to, I met Christopher Knowles, he brought him to lunch one day. And at some point along the way, we began talking about doing a piece which became eventually Einstein on the Beach. And at one point, Bob said to me, "Do you know the choreographer, Lucinda Chalice?" And as a matter of fact, I did know her work. I had seen, was it at the Washington Square Methodist Church, or was it at Judson Church?
Washington Square Methodist.
It was there. I went to see a performance of hers, which was done in silence, which I thought was very daring. That would put me out of a job. And I didn't. And when he said, Bob said, "Would you like? What do you think of her?" I said, "I think the work is beautiful, but you know she doesn't use music." So, but I was enthusiastic, really and truly, and and she was invited to be one, and has become. The choreographic work has become an essential part of the work.
Yeah, no, I agree. Bob, how did you experience Lucinda and Phil for the first time?
Well, I had heard Phil's music and liked it very much and was intrigued by it. And I'd heard a lot about Lucinda, although I'd never seen her perform, and I met her quite by chance in New Haven after a performance I did with Christopher Knowles. And we started talking, and I asked her that evening, I said, I'm going to make a work called Einstein on the Beach, and would you like to be in it? And she said yes, and we spoke the next morning, and that was the beginning.
And you had planned, I think, already for a long time. I've read in the archives of the of your foundation that all three of them, which is actually kind of interesting, I think, formed their own ensemble. So you all basically didn't work with an existing company, but needed maybe some new style of performers. And Phillips was the Philip Glass Ensemble, and Lucinda had the Lucinda Childs Dance Company, which still exists today, which is amazing. And Robert Wilson had the Bert Hoffman School of Birds. And in those archives, I read, I think in the 70s, and you had at one point also a place in British Columbia, where you wanted to develop all your new work, but that you had planned to, sort of a 10-year plan was to write a large opera. Is this the opera that you had in mind?
Maybe. I don't even remember that. I've made many different works in the theater. I've made works that are 30 seconds long. I've made works that are an hour and a half long. Lucinda and I performed in a piece that was about an hour and a half, the patio play. And I made plays that were 7 days long and 12 hours. And so I've always been interested in long duration of time and theater. And I never really knew what to call the works. When I first went to France with a 7-hour play that was silent, the Death Man Glance, the French called it an opera. They called it a silent opera. And after thinking about it, I thought that was a good way to describe it. It was structured silences. And if we go back to the original meaning of the word opera, it means opus or work. And so I think about opera, for me, that it's... The wonderful thing about it is that it includes all the arts. It can be architecture, painting, dance, music, poetry. All of the arts are in the theater and can come under this idea of opera, and not in the old, in the Latin sense of the word, opus, work. So I think I was thinking about opera in that sense.
Philip, can you talk a little bit about sort of the compositional process of Einstein and working with the director?
We hit upon a way that was so well suited to us, and we did three or four of the pieces after that over the years, 7 or 8 years apart. We didn't rush back to working, and we liked a little period of time away from each other, but we always were able to find a way to work together. The first thing, of course, was the time. That's the thing we shared. The very first thing we did was to say, okay, how many acts, how long are the acts? And one of us said, well, it's maybe 4 acts, and there would be 3 images, and I suggested the order of the images, and then he said maybe the pieces, and if each act was an hour long, this is how it got to be. And then he had the idea of these knee plays. A knee play is like your knee connects the leg. And he had an idea of these little plays that happened in between the acts, one and also one at the beginning, one at the end. Well, when you had it all up, it came up to about 4.5 hours. But we hadn't actually written a note or made a drawing. That was just, we were talking about time. Then the interesting thing, we began talking about the piece. And if you've had any conversations with Bob, which I know you have, you'll notice how he will, at some point, kind of absentmindedly pick up a piece of paper and start drawing. Right. He always says that because drawing is a way of thinking. And these drawings that he made during these conversations became a book of drawings. Then I would take the book home. It was very simple. I would take an image, like a trial, an image of a trial. I would put it on the piano where the music would be, and it would play the music that went with the picture. It was really like that. It was kind of like that. And then, so the images, the time came, we did the time together. Then we did the images, then the music came, and then the staging came after that. Then
when did the libretto come in?
The libretto came in this way. We would be working on a thing like a trial. And Bob would say to him, you know, I think the judge should make a speech. And he said, Mr. Johnson, he was one of the judges, he said, Mr. Johnson, could you write a speech?
So that was already in the rehearsal process.
We were in the rehearsal.
Yeah.
And Mr. Johnson said,
so you had written all the music?
Well, yes. And Mr. Johnson said, yes, I can write a speech. And he came back the next day with a beautiful speech. And then, let me tell you something about the speech. The first speech was that one. We ended up in Paris some months later. And we're sitting there for the piece. And we come to that same place in the opera, and Mr. Johnson has a new speech in French that none of us knew that he could speak at all. So he was a very amazing guy. Then with Lucinda, I think, Bob, did you ask her if she would write this? Oh, yes. I remember very clearly. He said, you know, we've never said anything about the beach. So Bob said to Lucinda, could you write something about the beach? And so she wrote the piece about the prematurely air-conditioned supermarket.
How did that happen?
I have to tell you something. I found out something very recently, but you don't know, I'm telling you now. I was talking to someone, you know, Paul, his name was John Walters, who's a filmmaker. He told me that Einstein used to walk around the supermarkets in Princeton pushing the cars because it relaxed him. And somehow or other, Lucinda, years and years later, wrote a piece about the supermarket.
Did you, Lucinda, did you know about that?
No.
Bob, did you know that?
No.
So somehow there was a supermarket. These kinds of things happen all. So that was the two important speeches. And then the most important one, if I may say that, was Christopher. And Christopher, you know, he had a wonderful imagination. He listened to the radio a lot. And a lot of the things you hear on the radio ended up in the text. And if you were, in 1976, listening to the text carefully, anybody who listened to the radio would know where those pieces came from. Years later, we hear the same text, and they're still as effective as they was, even though the audiences are much younger. For example, one of the texts after the second trial, he simply lists the DJ and the hours and the radio station of a whole day's program. That's part of the text. And if you heard that, then he even recited some of the lyrics that were sung in the songs. So that what Christopher was able to do was to bring in a kind of everyday, the texts were about the everyday life that we lived in New York at that time. And because of that, they seemed so natural to us. And they became the text of Einstein.
Yeah.
Then we have, of course, the supermarket, which the Cinder channeled, and Mr. Johnson, who that was where he got those ideas from.
Bob, can you talk maybe a little bit about the story, the structure of Einstein, and sort of the different scenes and how the piece, what the architecture of the piece is?
The way Phil described very clearly how we made the piece, we started with four acts and three themes that reoccur three times, and all the possible variations you can have of themes A, B, and C together. So simply it's Act 1, A and B. Act 2, C and A. Act 3, B and C. And Act 4, all three themes together for the first time, A, B, and C. Actually, in some ways, people looked at the work as being very radical, and in some ways it is radical even today, but this structure is a classical form, and it's theme and variation, so there's not really anything so new about that. And it was a time-space construction. So for the space, visually, I took the three traditional ways that painters have measured space. If I see my hand here, I can say it's a portrait. If I see my hand here, I can say it's a still life. But if I go across the street, it's a part of a landscape. So the knee plays, the interlude scenes became portraits, so they were the closest to the audience. The train and trial scenes were still lives for me, the next closest to the audience. And the deepest space were the fields, were the spaceship. And you have three of them. So the first you see a small spaceship, and the second one you see a bigger spaceship. And the third one, you're in the interior of the spaceship. So it was a visual architectural construction of images and time and space. And the curious thing is that when I first met Phil, I said, how do you write music? And he explained to me a structure. And I said, wow, that's the way I think too. And so I think that, as Phil said, the amazing thing is we had a common sense of time. And we rather quickly agreed on how long a scene should be. It's a little bit like everyone in this room lives in a big apartment building. So the architect has designed the building and gives the form and the cohesion, the structure, in the building where we live, and this man can live in the building, and he can have his apartment to be the way he wants, and this man can have the apartment the way he wants, and these two women can have their apartment the way they want, and we all live in this building and can fill in the form, but the architect is given the structure. And Phil and I worked on a mega structure in which then we could be more free to ask Mr. Johnson to write a speech or Christopher Knowles to participate. But we started with the form, which was a classical structure.
Now, Lucinda, you've lived in this building, the Paul Einstein on the Beach. You've performed it probably 100 times all over the world, from Japan to South America, Europe, in New York, in North America, actually only in New York. So these performances here in Toronto are the first time Einstein on the Beach ever is going to be seen outside of New York City in North America, which is a triumph for us, but kind of also a scandal. And your role that you created with Bob is almost constantly on stage. So how does one perform? How does it feel like? What kind of relationship do you have with the audience? And how exhausted are you afterwards?
Well, the last performances that I did actually was in 1992, it was almost 20 years ago. You don't really think about time, you know, really thinking about, you're carried by the music, carried by the whole concept of working in this very special aesthetic where the content is not in and of itself the only important thing, it's how you do what you do, and the process that you go through. Of course, the stamina is an issue as well. And for me, it was an enormous transition because, as Philip said earlier, originally I was working with a very small group, no music at all, no decor. To work with Bob, when we initially met, it wasn't really clear to me if he was wanting me to be involved as an actress or a dancer. And I found out very quickly it doesn't really matter. What he wants is a performance style, a performance quality. And this is a performance art. And it was such a new experience for me to work in this way, to work in this collaborative fashion, sharing ideas, exchanging ideas constantly. So I think the actual performing of it was just the pleasure of having been through that process with both of them.
To me, Einstein